It's Marketplace Tech for March 23rd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Following the bombings in Brussels yesterday, the first images of a subway station and airport racked by explosions spread quickly on social media. And as regular communication lines went down under the weight of people calling each other, social media also became a kind of hack or kludge for people to get in touch. Services like Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat are fundamentally tools for communication and staying connected. Daniela Vincenti is the editor-in-chief of Euractiv. It's a media network that covers the European Union's presence in Brussels. Daniela, I know Facebook activated its safety check feature yesterday. What happened next?
Everybody started reacting. I had in basically 1 hour, I've seen 100 of my Facebook contacts reacting immediately.
I've heard reports that suggest some people there are being encouraged to use social media as a way to check in and communicate with each other because some of the cell phone towers or the cell networks have been jammed.
That's what happened as well. I could not reach my team because I was not in the EU quarter, not even with landlines or mobile phones. Everything was blocked. But actually, I could communicate via Twitter.
I know it's still really early and a lot of these feelings are really raw, but can you talk about what you observed in Paris after the attacks and the economic impact there and what you're seeing or what you anticipate in Brussels?
Well, the economic impact, I think we have learned the lesson of the past lockdown. This is still a working week. Schools are in session until the end of the week. We have Easter coming up. So I think they've learned that they cannot react in a panic and that they should continue as nothing happened. In terms of economic activity, this is the way we will fight back.
Daniela Vincenti is editor-in-chief of Euractiv.com. She is in Brussels. Daniela, thank you very much.
Thank you to you.
By the way, beyond social media, U.S. wireless carriers like Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint are opting to credit users or not charge them for calls and texts sent to and from Belgium for the next few days, some of them until the end of the month. We've posted information on that at facebook.com/marketplacetech. Now that the FBI and the Department of Justice have postponed a hearing on whether Apple should be forced to help the government unlock an iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino shooters, there are a few key questions. What third-party approach to law enforcement with a solution, and what is the solution the government is going to try over the next few weeks? Security researchers have been talking about that second one for a long time. Joseph Lorenzo Hall is chief technologist at the nonprofit Center for Democracy and Technology. Joseph, can you describe the methods the FBI might be looking at?
There are things like decapsulation, where you etch or shave the top of a chip off and use a scanning tunneling microscope to check out the contents of the chip. And there's weirder things like bouncing lasers off. What we think is happening here is something called NAND mirroring, which is an easy way to explain it. Your phone has a little bit of memory in it, and you can overwrite that memory and make it forget the last few minutes of activity. And so in this case, you'd make it forget the last few passcode attempts so that it wouldn't erase itself.
Who might do this?
There's plenty of forensics companies that would have the capabilities to do this kind of a thing. It's not as complicated as some of the wilder, more fantastical techniques.
Do you have a sense of how much money a firm might make doing this for the government?
Yeah, I think it would be pretty profitable. There are many local law enforcement entities with hundreds of phones on their desks. And so you already could see the business case. You could, charge, $50,000 per one of those phones. You have a pretty penny sitting in your pocket.
So what happened here? Did Apple and the security industry basically call the government's bluff? And we're seeing that play out?
It's unclear what happened here. What I've been saying is it seems like it's three-quarters pomp and circumstance. Essentially, they recognize they're probably going to lose the legal case. And one-quarter, hey, that weird idea from those hippies might actually work, which, to be, you know, to give credit where credit's due, Daniel Kahn Gilmore of the ACLU was the first to sort of describe this technique.
So where do you see the debate heading from here?
We are very much teetering on a brink in some of our opinions, in the sense that, you know, democracy requires having space to make mistakes, spaces to keep secrets, so to speak. And fundamentally, the fight we're having right now is, should there be a place that the government categorically cannot reach? And inevitably, within a few years, we will get there when we start doing things like putting computers in our heads, which we call, you know, computational supported cognitive work. And that's a place where I think we're going to have to set some hard lines about the government's ability to get access to that kind of information.
Joseph Lorenzo Hall is chief technologist at the nonprofit Center for Democracy and Technology. Joseph, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And does this music sound familiar? An avid gamer could probably name the company it came from just on style. That music has Nintendo written all over it. It's from a game called Miitomo, which has been a big hit on, wait for it, mobile phones. After years of the company eschewing the mobile world, Nintendo's first real mobile game hit 1 million downloads this week, and company stock jumped over 8% yesterday. Maybe Nintendo has a future in mobile after all, even without the help of Mario. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.